You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
It's Monday, so we're turning to the political junkie Ken Rudin back with us. Hey, Ken, how's the weekend?
What is Rudy Giuliani doing?
and why does it matter?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, Rudy Giuliani is now quoted as saying, "I'm more focused on the law than the facts." Okay.
But he also says he's just learning the facts and he's halfway there. And any guy, if I were had a lawyer who was halfway there, I would not want him or her on national television trying to explain what's going on when he or she doesn't know exactly what's going on. Well, I don't know what the word is anymore. I'm running out of adjectives.
So I guess one of the questions I had in hearing the different versions of what he was saying in different venues is this a well-thought-out legal strategy with the president and Rudy Giuliani, or is he winging it in some ways? Because that's kind of what it looks like.
See, I really do think it's the latter. I've seen reports of saying that Trump and Giuliani have organized this thing, that the conversation that Rudy Giuliani had last Wednesday night on Hannity regarding what Michael Cohen was paid and when he was paid and things like that. That was part of a strategy. But then when you have the president changing his previous tune on Twitter the next day and then coming out and say, well, you know, Rudy has to get his facts straight or his lie straight or whatever it is, it doesn't sound like it's a coordinated strategy at all. If it is, it's the worst coordination I've ever heard in my life.
Here's Rudy Giuliani on ABC News over the weekend talking about whether President Trump will testify in the Mueller probe. Listen.
Are you confident the president will not take the Fifth in this case?
Oh, how could I ever be confident of that? When I'm facing a situation with the president and all the other lawyers are, in which every lawyer in America thinks he'd be a fool to testify.
What do you take from that, Ken?
when Giuliani says, how could I be confident of that? Meaning, how could I be confident of anything that Donald Trump may or may not do? And that's the thing. So when you have an attorney going forward and saying that he will do this or the president will not do that, how do you know? You don't really know.
Apparently, Michael Avenatti, who is representing Stormy Daniels, otherwise known as Stephanie Clifford, is saying
who cares what her real name is?
The more Giuliani talks, the better their case gets. Do you understand? And I'll be asking my guests about this, but do you understand why he'd be saying that now?
Well, I don't understand why Giuliani is saying what he's saying, but of course, if they're making the case that the president did know about the payments, and of course Giuliani has not explained exactly when the president knew about it, but if he knew about it, it puts whatever Michael Cohen has said and what the president has said all as lies that he didn't know, and this is just news to him, and it's also a question about whether it's campaign finance violation or the Ethics in Government Act violation when you have to report any kind of liabilities of $10,000 and more. And that's apparently what the president did in paying off and, you know, in giving these funneling these amounts to Michael Cohen. So either way, whether it's campaign finance or ethics in government, it seems like laws may be being broken. And again, I don't know why you have Giuliani making news on the TV shows, on the network shows, when the president's lawyers are trying to get their story straight.
Okay, so good point. You just said Giuliani has made news on this, and you and I a minute ago were talking about the strategy, and maybe this is a point to get. I mean, and there's been a lot of speculation that this is to get out ahead of anything that Michael Cohen would say if he decides to cooperate.
Well, that is interesting because when Giuliani yesterday on this week on ABC said that Cohen is no longer the president's personal attorney, I don't think we knew that until yesterday. I think it was announced like that. So I wonder, you know, you always hear this idiom about throwing people under the bus. You wonder if the president has abandoned Michael Cohen. And everything I've read about Cohen seems like he is even though he's a tough guy up front, he seems to have a fragile ego. And you just wonder if he could, look, who knows, but who he could turn, unlike Paul Manafort, who it seems like Robert Mueller is doing everything he can to get him to turn, and Manafort won't budge. But Cohen seems more fragile than Manafort.
Interesting politics here, Ken, in an article in Politico about this team of House members who are working hard to delegitimize Mueller and what it says about Washington. Here's a bit from the piece. Their emergence, and again, this group of House members, underscores a reality of the Trump era. Power and prominence on Capitol Hill these days often flow not to the most senior lawmakers, but to Republicans who display allegiance to a president who prizes loyalty. None of the four holds a powerful committee chairmanship, but they have something just as important, regular airtime on Fox News. So their media exposure and the president noting, right, and watching their media exposure has apparently given this group of House lawmakers, I guess, more credence, more prominence in the eyes of the president. And that's unusual in the way the power structure works. What do you think?
Well, first of all, you mentioned credence. I hope you're not mocking my fact last week that
I absolutely am.
but that is vintage Donald Trump, that he loves people who appear on television. And I think that between Ronnie Jackson and others he's appointed or tried to appoint to the administration, a lot of it is about loyalty, but also he likes the way they appear on TV. And I kind of think that the Joseph DeGeneva attempted appointment as one of his attorneys to Rudy Giuliani, they're combative, they're loyal, and that's basically all you need, at least if you're Donald Trump.
Ken, what do you think?
You know, also, one more thing about the Fifth Amendment. All you have to do is go back to 2016 and listen to Donald Trump, what he said about the Fifth Amendment, about how only the mob takes the Fifth Amendment.
Right.
And obviously, if you take the Fifth Amendment, you're obviously guilty, like Hillary Clinton's aides who took the Fifth over the email server. If somebody else takes the Fifth Amendment, you're obviously guilty. If you take the Fifth Amendment, or somebody like, you know, Michael Cohen may take the Fifth Amendment, it's because of constitutional protection.
I know what you're talking about.
I mean,
he was in a packed arena. This was during the presidential campaign, and he was saying, why should anybody involved in the emails or anybody else take the Fifth? We all know why they do it. It's because you're guilty. Only the media remembers that, Ken. People don't care.
Well, I don't know if people don't care, but it's just so a dizzying array of things that change day after day after day what happens on Monday is the most amazing thing in the world until Tuesday comes, and then something else happens on Tuesday, and you forget about what happened on Monday.
I wanted to ask you about Gina Haspel and this hearing to be the director of CIA. If the Washington Post is correct and the story looks well-sourced, she offered to withdraw. What does that tell you about what she may face?
Well, I think she'll certainly face tremendous questioning from the Democrats on what she did in her years as in the CIA regarding her role in interrogation of terrorist suspects. I mean, we know how the president feels about waterboarding, and we know how his administration feels about waterboarding. But there are other people who say that, you know, this sounds pretty close to torture. Unfortunately, John McCain's voice is being muted these days, but I mean, he's one of the most elegant voices against torture and waterboarding, but I don't think the president knows it. But I think Gina Haspel knows that this is going to be a very controversial nomination. And look, you still have a Republican majority, and until one Republican says he or she is not going to vote for her, her confirmation should be assured. But what she's afraid of is personal damage, a damage to her personally and to the CIA. Although, if you listen to what some of the administration people have said about the CIA and the FBI and the intelligence agencies since January of 2017, criticizing intelligence agencies does not seem to be a reluctant task for these administration people, including the president.
You mentioned Senator McCain here. Have you been reading some of what's coming out from the visits?
Every word.
People like Vice President Biden have been making? What are you drawing from that?
You know something? I like so many Americans, I have so many mixed feelings about John McCain. I mean, there's no question about his sacrifice and his courage and his and what he's done in his career. There are some times where he is actually his words or belies his, I should say, his actions belie his words when you think he should stand up and he doesn't. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, he does come through. And I think the fact is that especially in his, shall we say, waning days in the Senate, his courage and his perseverance and his dignity come through. And I haven't seen specifics, but I understand that in Dallas last week during his speech to the NRA, the president still criticized McCain. And when you go to Republican rallies, McCain's name is mentioned. They booed John McCain. This is just, you know, it was awful when he said he wasn't a hero back in 2015, and it's awful now when it's you know, appears to be in his final days.
I have a sense that when you're talking about when you think he would stand up, he doesn't, and how deeply is he willing to hold to those core principles. I mean, some of the things that he said and did in one of his reelection campaigns, I think he had a primary challenger. Was it the
yep,
was it the
yep,
last
J.D.
yeah
Hayworth.
And it is, I mean, if you go back and you read some of the things that he was saying, let's say about immigration reform, it seemed like he'd kind of abandoned his core principles to win that race.
That's absolutely true. Think of John McCain in 2000 when it was the Straight Talk Express, when he was running an insurgent campaign against George W. Bush, the Republican front runner. And he, you know, the things he said to the press and how he dealt with issues lately, it was just a freedom to it, an honesty to it. And when he realized that that was not the way to go and he became the nominee in 2008, he changed his tune on a lot of issues like immigration. But in fairness to John McCain, there were several instances during the campaign where somebody would yell out something inflammatory or insulting about Barack Obama.
That's right.
And McCain would always correct them and say that is disrespectful. This is absolutely not true. He's a fine person. And to that, I will always think of John McCain with respect and admiration.
I was reading Dan Balz in the Washington Post, who's one of my favorite writers for the Post, and he's writing about Ohio, where there's a primary election tomorrow. And Dan is writing about how Trump has turned Ohio politics upside down, especially given the brand of Republican politics for the governor, John Kasich. What are you going to be watching in Ohio tomorrow?
Well, I will tell you that the big primary to watch tomorrow is West Virginia for the Senate. But in Ohio, it is very interesting because, first of all, in the Senate race, it's very interesting. Sherrod Brown, the populist Democrat who's running for a third term, is the Democrat. And Jim Renacci, the congressman, is the Republican who's probably going to win the Republican nomination. It's interesting that Sherrod Brown, in a state that Donald Trump won by 8 percentage points, mm-hmm. Sherrod Brown backs the president on the tariffs.
Yeah,
he
on the backs trade
them
stuff.
On his on trade stuff, whereas Renacci is a regular Republican who believes in free trade. So that's interesting. It's also interesting to watch the Democratic primary for governor in Ohio between Richard Cordray, who's the establishment choice, and the mayor. Mayor. Dennis Kucinich, who's become a Trump apologist on Fox News.
That is crazy. I mean, that political evolution makes no sense at all, Ken.
Unlike everything I always say.
A quick word about West Virginia. You're watching what?
Don Blankenship, the mine owner who went to prison, whose mine exploded, 29 miners were killed. He could be another Roy Moore in West Virginia. If he wins the Republican primary, Republicans' chances against Joe Manchin in November could be doomed.
And President Trump is tweeting about that this morning, saying, get out and vote, but don't vote for Don Blankenship. Yes. Well, we'll see what kind of a difference that makes. Here's what the president tweeted. Let me just read this. To the great people of West Virginia, we have together a really great chance to keep making a big difference. Problem is Don Blankenship, currently running for the Senate, can't win the general election in your state. No way. Remember Alabama. So how much will that matter?
Wow. Well, it may matter, but it's interesting to say, remember Alabama, when in Alabama he went all out for
That's
Roy Moore,
right.
Unlike other Republicans who said, you got to stay away from this guy. He did not back away from Roy Moore. It's interesting that he's listening to somebody new, somebody different when it comes to West Virginia. Watch Indiana as well. There were three Republicans trying to find out, run as pro-Trump loyalists, while other Republicans are running away from the president. In these Senate battles, it seems to be a battle who is the most pro-Trump candidate.
One note for you here, Ken, from my friend Relin, who tweets, I love you and Ken Rudin. At this point, laughter, though based on true and painful facts, is my coping mechanism. Good thing we laugh a lot, Ken, when you come on the air.
I stopped laughing ever since you insulted me about Clearwater Revival.
I'll talk to you next Monday.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.